Hey, Redcasters, be sure to subscribe to our channel and ring the bell to be notified about our latest videos. Go Big Red.
Welcome to the Go Big Redcast, the Husker Fan Sports Show.
Welcome to the Go Big Redcast. I'm your host, David Gaspers, and I'm with Boomer.
Hey, Dave, good to be back. I know we've taken a few weeks off, but has anything happened in sports in the last couple of weeks, whether it's Huskers or just in general? Are we going to be having anything to talk about or fill a show?
I don't know, Boomer. I think it's pretty quiet, but I've been in an igloo for the last month, so I really can't say. Maybe I'll ask Honky. He's probably been around. What's up, Honk?
Yeah. In an attempt to get the Redcast a couple podcast Emmys, I'm now going by my new ESPN-given name, Honk Morgan.
Yeah, that was one of the more interesting news bits that came out today, that ESPN has had to give back Emmys for their College Game Day show, which has won multiple show Emmys. The on-air personalities aren't supposed to get the Emmys, right? It's the production team that gets it. But ESPN felt they wanted to reward guys like Kirk Herbstreit and Sam Ponder and everyone else, and so they just like faked names of production team members and then changed the actual engraving, and they had to return those. That's an amazing story. I really thought it was hilarious that they didn't actually even change Sam Ponder's last name.
They didn't want to make it too obvious, Dave.
Yeah. No, they just called her Steve. I
mean, well, it explains a lot why ESPN had no issue with what Michigan did. I mean, come on, you know, this is
they're like, oh, wait a second.
Do people have to vacate Emmys that often? I guess it's something new.
This is extremely unusual, more so than team vacating wins, I would say, these days. Well, we vacated a few weeks of the show. We did take a nice little holiday break, but I think we all needed it. Honky, I think, you know, you took a little bit longer of a break, but you also did approximately 112 shows between January and October this year, last year. So I don't know if you'll do as many on season 8. I maybe advise you to go a little slower on the pace of the shows, but glad to have you back on. And do you feel refreshed?
I guess it's, you know, I mean, I didn't spend a lot of time watching bowl games, so I didn't use up all that energy.
That's right.
Yeah. So it's good to get through the bowls. They were really good playoffs. So I'll give them that. So looking forward and trying to make it into a positive is that I think an expanded playoff, if those games are anything like the ones that we just watched, that's a great sign for the future. But man, this bowl season was barf. And, you know, Dave, we had drinks over the week between the holidays, and that was about the only time I watched any bowls at all, was just that night with you and just there in the background. That's about it. And everything that I read and social media, you know, following during the games, I don't think I missed a whole lot. So, but anyways, glad to be back and, ready to get going.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll say from a betting perspective, it's easier to bet the playoff games because they actually try. Where some of the bowl games, it was almost impossible to figure out what was going on. But there's a lot going on, right? I mean, like we feels like we got three shows worth of content here. We can talk a lot about football. We can talk a little bit about that national championship game and what the Big Ten's going to look like next year. Talk about all the recruiting and transfer portal action. All the stuff that Rule and company are doing over there in the North Stadium that seems to be doing a lot of good for everyone. And we can also talk about some Nebraska basketball for once and get excited about that. So, Honky, what are you feeling like?
Well, I'm fresh off of being at PBA on Tuesday night for the big victory over number one Purdue. So start with a little basketball.
Let's do it. We're talking Nebraska ball. Maybe we need to start calling it Hoiberg ball here pretty soon, because Fred looks like he has gotten over the hump here, and the program is definitely going in the right direction. Honky, what was the I think I know the answer, but I'll ask anyway. What was the atmosphere like there in PBA?
Well, being you would understand this because you were at the game with me back in 2014 with Wisconsin. It wasn't quite No Sit Sunday. But it was for Tuesday night during the off time where the students weren't on campus during the break, when it was, you know, disaster outside, icy. A poor gentleman like slipped right outside the front, I mean, got her head, the ambulance came and got him, that kind of stuff. For all of that being the case, it was amazing, the atmosphere. If there was 14,000 people, which is what I think I saw was what they said was in there. I don't know if there's a scan seats or not, but it was a loud crowd and progressively louder as the game went on. Each one of those threes that KC made, you know, all of a sudden there's this belief that, my gosh, I mean, when it got down to one in the second half, but then we go back on another run, it was like, I think we're going to do this. And yeah, it was awesome to be there at the end. And then to watch the crowd, I didn't join everyone on the crowd or on the court, but that was a heck of a scene there. And for a fan base that's just been starving for victories like this and moments like this, that was huge. It just rejuvenated, I think, a lot of people. And there were people in the crowd that weren't just basketball, you know, players, right, and coaches, right, and fans too. So I think it was good for a lot of people to see that, and good for Husker Nation.
Now, there's reports of Matt Rhule being out on the floor after the game. I mean, I think it would have been fun to see you out there in your schmock. And then maybe, you know, you two just run into each other and you're like, hey.
There's the restraining order.
I know you.
Yeah, it'd be like Major League where you just go up and, hey, punch a guy and then hug him. And everyone's just, you know, having a ball and, you know. I don't mean punch Rhule, but.
He'd punch you. I think that's how it would work.
He'd punch me for being the doppelganger. Yeah. No, that was awesome to see down there, too. That was worth the price of admission, was just looking down there and seeing Trev and then Rhule with him. And then, you know, Trev's wife was there. And I think Rule's two daughters were with him. Those five are sitting right at the court side. And, you know, Michael Schaefer, he wrote something. I don't quote a lot of things Schaefer says, but I'll tell you what, he tweeted something I thought that was really, really kind of powerful afterwards, where you don't have to go far back in Nebraska history to find an AD and a head coach that didn't, it seemed like it pained them to go to games like that. And my understanding, I didn't pay a lot of attention when Moose was here with basketball, but that he had a suite and that he wasn't in the suite ever. It was always dark. Mm-hmm. And Trev couldn't be any different. To be right on court side, I mean, he's as visible as you're going to get, and he's as present as you're going to be. And if that game goes sideways, he's going to be sitting right there in the front row hearing it from people. But you know what? That's what he wants. That's what he wants to be. And that's leadership there. And I was so happy to watch all the videos of him and then Rhule with him and the kids, and they're all running on the court. And I don't know. I mean, I think that's a tangible example of culture. The C word that we always hear that's hard to describe, what is culture? That's an example there of culture starting to take over. And there were volleyball people in the stands, and you're starting to kind of get this family feel of the athletic department, and that all leads up to Trev.
Yeah. And the culture is not just football, to your point. We're talking about as a whole, the athletic department. And I think basketball is a part of that culture, right, Boomer? I mean, like a couple of years ago, we were, you know, pulling out whatever hair we had left because the team couldn't hit a three. They didn't play defense. They would go absent for halves at a time, it felt like, offensively. This team, now they struggled a little bit against a very good Wisconsin team on the road. I'll tell you what, a lot of teams are going to struggle against that Wisconsin team in the Kohl Center, and Big Ten road games are always tough. We're going to have one here in 24 hours. We're going to see how we can bounce back. But when we got a home game, Fred really got them to play with the determination and defensive intensity necessary to beat the number one team in the country. And then they made their shots, right, Boomer? I mean, like, boy, that's big. 14 threes, I think.
Yeah, it was nice to finally see those, you know, start going in, especially, you know, against Wisconsin. They struggled really with threes early on that. And, you know, just the games that they've lost, they just really struggled with that three, and the defense would kind of break down. But when the team puts it together, you know, you can see what they can do. You know, a game like Purdue or, you know, against Indiana, you know, we've seen what this team is capable of when they play. You know, we use complimentary football all the time. Well, there's complimentary basketball too. Can we, you know, play defense? Can we hit some shots? Can they make free throws? And are you getting contributions from everybody on the team? You're not just counting on, you know, Tominaga to come out there and hopefully light the world on fire. And, you know, this was that kind of game where you got to see everybody participating in, whether it's, you know, scoring buckets or getting steals and turnovers or just playing good defense, getting rebounds. I mean, you know, you had guys like Mast and, you know, Hoiberg playing well in the game, and, you know, CJ Wilker's been a great,
great
player this year. I mean, just what he's turned into, just you can almost always seem to count on him coming off the bench and just suddenly, you know, giving you that injection or spark, you know, hitting a three and making a couple of big plays and getting some points when the team really needs it. And, you know, that goes back to that culture. Maybe, you know, this is kind of what I think we all thought Hoiberg would have as a team, you know, probably sooner than he has so far.
Yep. But
at least we're finally seeing it here for a variety of reasons. So
Yeah. I mean, it's great to see someone like CJ Welcher stick with this program and even have a diminished role at times over the last couple of years, and now really find a really key role as kind of like the key six man off the bench. And I mean, Honky, I mean, we've talked, especially earlier in the Hoiberg era, about like what Fred wanted and all those type of things. And, you know, it was like they're kind of replicate the Iowa State success, and it just didn't work. But they've changed their recruiting philosophy, got better fits in the program. I still think offensively they're doing a lot of stuff that Fred wants to do. Looking at Rink Mast bring the ball up as a 6'10 point center is exactly what Fred has always envisioned. But the difference here is they've learned how to play Big Ten defense, right? And that can change everything and keep them in games when they're not hitting threes and keeps their intensity up. What do you think about Hoiberg ball now?
Well, I mean, it looks a lot better for sure.
Yeah.
I heard that I was sitting around some pretty good basketball people for the game, and some of the stuff I've heard, and I'm sure you've heard the same stuff as well, is that his pro background, the way that they defended against Edie, against a big, was very much a kind of an NBA style of doing it, and double teaming him down there and
triple teaming him at times.
I mean, the game to me started, it was all Mast to start the game. He scores the first 7 points, really sets the tone. But the toughness that he gave, I mean, he looked like such a little kid out there to Edie, which is amazing because you know how big Mast
is. 6 inches shorter,
But he just looks so small. But he, I mean, he played lower body against him. He was not allowing Edie within 5 feet of the hoop. And then they always had somebody right around him. But there were a couple times, too, on a couple of possessions where the first person that was on Edie before anybody else could get there maybe was Hoiberg, or maybe it was
Tomanaga.
Tomanaga got a foul on him. I was like, well, that's a mismatch. But, I mean, it was just there's this toughness. Like, they were going to send everybody they could. And then eventually you get, you know, Bryce Williams swatting away a ball on him too, you know, blocking him at the very end.
It was just really
impressive. And I get it for all the fans that are frustrated that it took to now. I completely get it. But I'm going to go back to the guy that I talked about earlier, Trev. I was really happy for Trev watching this game because that's a perfect example of a couple of years ago. You had Frost and you had Hoiberg, and you had Trev making really difficult decisions. You know, do I keep him? Do I get rid of him? Well, he kept them both, and he set goals down, and we're going to make these changes. We're going to do these things. And, you know, he didn't just go ahead and get rid of the guys right away. Frost, things didn't pan out for him. Hoiberg's made some real tangible changes. It started with Abdelmassi, whatever, not being here anymore and not flipping the team every single year so that you were looking at a roster every year where you're like, I don't know anybody. I mean, there's some new guys on this roster, don't get me wrong, but there's also a lot of holdovers from that team that was having success last year. And the other part of it is that the guys that they did bring in, the new guys, these are men. I mean, Mast and Alec
completely
and William,
different.
Wow. These guys have played, you know, hundreds of basketball games between them. And that's completely different than just bringing in, you know, some hotshot, you know, newcomer
Duke guy or whatever
that hasn't done it. I mean, Mast played 4 years at Bradley and same thing there with Williams at Charlotte. And obviously, you know, Alex played a ton too. So you see it. It just looks like an experienced team. And also to hold them to that higher standard, it is frustrating when you see them play poorly against Wisconsin. And I think tomorrow night, and Justin, you had the question, the game tomorrow night is 8:30 on BTN. It's immediately following 6:30 on BTN is Nebraska against Iowa at home in wrestling, which is huge.
Oh, wow.
Well, at 8:30, it goes right into at 8:30, we're at Iowa. And that's, you know, we can't take games off. This has got to be an experienced team now that this is an old team. This is a team that's now beat the number one team in the country. There's nobody on this schedule we should look at and say we can't play with. Let's not repeat, you know, the Wisconsin performance tomorrow night, sure. which I just thought that was real lackadaisical.
Yeah, and I don't think that will happen. I'm not going to sit here and guarantee a win, though, right? Boomer, you like bracketology as much as me. The bracket matrix website does a really good job of laying out, I think, up to 54 different bracket projections. I checked right before the show, and I think we're on the 11 seed line, which is up a bit from just yesterday. So, yeah, as brackets get updated, we've moved off of the play-in line, right, Honky, and actually into an 11 seed. I think that makes us the sixth or seventh team in the Big Ten. So the Big Ten isn't as down as, say, it was a few years ago when we got left out, even though we went 13-5 in conference, but it maybe not be a vintage 9 or 10 team bid conference, but I think, you know, 6 or 7 is quite likely. And right, I mean, the numbers, Boomer, we are 13-3, 3-2, and I mean, we can break this down 8 ways from Sunday, but bottom line is if you go 8-7 in your last 15, they got 15 conference games. I would feel very confident that we're in the tournament, because if you go 8-7, that means you've probably protected your home court. I think that's primary number one. I think you probably stole a 1 or 2 road wins. We can still win tomorrow night, right? Iowa has a good net ranking, but they're not a vintage Iowa team, especially offensively. But that's not a given, right? I want to make sure people understand. Honky, you're right. We need to build this momentum. It'd be so awesome to reel off a couple of wins here in a row. It's not easy to win road games in the Big Ten. So it's not going to be easy, but I think we can get a couple of them. And then I think we got to make sure we don't have any bad losses, right? We don't want to go out there and lose to a couple teams that are maybe on the lower end of the Big Ten and put a scar on our resume, because I think if we just hold out at home, we're going to get a couple more quad one wins, right? You know, so I think it's going to be a fun next couple of months. And I think they could, they're a team that seems to think it's built to play well for a sustained period of time. And maybe they can make that run in the tournament where they finally get one victory.
Yeah, and kind of like you're saying, Dave, you know, just how tough it is to win on the road in the Big Ten, and, you know, just what people might think. I mean, if you look at Vegas, Iowa's favored tomorrow, actually by 3.5 right now. So that tells you just kind of how all that plays together. But I think you're right. I think, you know, I'd be happier winning 9 games just to get that 22 wins, just to make sure that kind of alleviates any concerns with kind of a softer non-con schedule that we had this year. It wasn't full of a lot of world beaters. I mean, but we did get the win against K-State, which helps in there. As long as they can keep winning, that would
they
be
need
good.
To stay up. Yeah,
yeah. And defend home court would be huge, because you still have some good opportunities there. You get, you know, Wisconsin. We play them again at home. There's a chance that would be a huge.
Illinois at home too, right?
What was that?
Illinois at home.
Nope. Illinois on the road. Yeah, so that's another opportunity for that huge road win. And you get Minnesota again at home, and they're playing reasonably good basketball too. So in Northwestern, you play twice, and they're.
They're in the tournament right now.
Quality too. So there's opportunities for good wins yet on the schedule. Like I said, the key is defending at home court. Don't lose those games. You know, if you can get those road wins against Iowa's, the Michigans, you know, don't lose to Penn State, obviously, at home. You know, Maryland on the road. You know, some good opportunities for some road wins that'll count up. But and just try to finish, you know, 8 or 9 of these last 15, and I think you put yourself in a great position to make the tournament and probably even be a little higher than an 11 seed if you can pull that off. So
I think my point too with Wisconsin was there's no shame in losing on the road to Wisconsin. I don't want to come across like that, but that was a bad performance too.
Yeah.
And this team, it's one of those things when we went and watched Purdue, it doesn't take more than about a minute or two of this of a game to go, oh, this is the team that's showing up tonight. And it's been a little bit of a Jekyll and Hyde team. And so they play the way they did against Purdue, and they played the way they did against Wisconsin. The Minnesota game, you got to see it right in the middle. You know, they played an outstanding first half and followed it up with probably their worst second half of the season. The Creighton game, they were a little more competitive than they were against Wisconsin, at least early, but then it went out
on apart. Yeah,
now, the thing is, I love Bryce Williams after that game the other night. He didn't talk about what it takes to get into the tournament. He doesn't have that all the baggage that we have as Nebraska ball fans, you know, about, can we just get to the tournament? Can we limp in and be a bubble team? He's talking about winning the Big Ten. And I know that's completely laughable by Husker basketball standards, but we just saw what that team did too. But look at the net rankings. I'll give you guys credit. You guys got me looking the net rankings here.
Yeah.
We beat number 3 Purdue. We've lost to number 14 Creighton. We lost to number 12 Wisconsin. We beat number 25 Michigan State. We're number 41 as of right now.
Yep.
Iowa tomorrow night is 67th on the road, because you have to beat top 75 teams to get a quad one win. We beat Iowa tomorrow night. That's a quad one win. K-State is number 74 right now. They've teeter-tottered around it, but as long as they stay above or below 75, they're a quad one win. And there's Minnesota, our other loss, and they're at number 85 right now. You know, that it's one of those deals where I just want to see this team keep getting better. That's the big thing. You know, you're going to – we could play a great game tomorrow night and still lose. This is – it's not even to me about just wins and losses. It's like, come out and not, you know, not have that lack of intensity that we heard so much with the Wisconsin game. Give Iowa your best shot. If you lose at Iowa, you lose at Iowa, but give them your best shot at least. And now that this team has got some of the wins under the belt that they have, it becomes a little less acceptable to have that bad performance. Like, you need to show up. We're Nebraska. We need to show up every single game. And but if we do that, I like this team. I really do. I like the intensity of these guys. I love these guys play to the crowd at home. Outstanding. Figure out a way to get a couple wins. A game like tomorrow night against the 67th team, a game like at Maryland. Those are games, and you can grab it.
Yep. Don't forget about Rutgers, right? We have back-to-back road games. Rutgers is not great, but they're not bad, and that'd be another win on the road, right? I mean, I think, you know, a net of 41 reflects what you just ran down with the good losses, quote-unquote, we have paired with a couple of good wins, right? You know, and I think just by the natural course of the Big Ten, we're going to hopefully collect several more good wins, and we might have to accept that we're going to get a couple of losses, but hopefully they're good losses that we are competitive and is not going to be detrimental to the resume. And I think Bryce Williams is right. They can win a lot of games here. They just got to keep it up. And, you know, I think there's a lot of potential there. I think the key, in my opinion, from an offensive standpoint, is that the ability of creating mismatches like with Mast, but also the fact that you've got so many guys that can complement the three-point shooting of Casey, right? I mean, we're not really relying on him to hit 5 a game, because CJ's hitting them, Mast can hit, Bryce can hit, even Jamarcus Lawrence randomly can put a 1 or 2 down, Sam Hoiberg can hit 3s. I mean,
Alec made a huge one when the game got down to 1, and he shot that, and everyone in our whole entire section was like, no, yeah.
So I guess I bring that up to Boomer's point, and what he usually highlights when we are losing a game is that sometimes we'll go on a drought and we just like flatline our scoring line, right? You know, it's so frustrating. Mm-hmm. When you have more than just 1 or 2 guys that can hit 3s, and I'm talking about like, you know, it competitive contested shots, and they can make shots. If you have 5 guys, 6 guys that can make a 3 here or there, it's far less likely to go as long in a drought when you've got more options to turn to, right? Because it's harder to defend all 5 players. And so I'm optimistic, I guess I'm trying to say, Honky, is that this team should be suited for the grind of the Big Ten, because it has enough depth, both offensively, defensively. To your point about Minnesota and Creighton, not so much Wisconsin, which is still concerning, but like feeling like you have a fully healthy Juwan Gary, who I think is the defensive intensity guy at times, right, is hopefully going to be really helpful there. I think Fred really challenged him after that Wisconsin game, and I think if Gary can be the guy that stirs our defensive drink, right, I think hopefully the intensity is going to be there the rest of the year.
Yep. When I think of intensity guys, I think of Gary and I think of Hoiberg.
Yeah.
And, you know, Hoiberg had the 2 pick-6 layups.
Yeah.
And those guys, they can do it on both sides of the court. And that is really – that's what can be fun about this right now, is we've scored 88 points now against Purdue. I mean, we are capable of scoring at a clip the way that we hoped would be possible when Hoiberg was hired, Hoiberg Bowl. But to play the defense, the complimentary defense, we just beat the number one team in the country by 16 points. Like that, this isn't just, and we didn't play a bad Purdue team that night. Purdue wasn't
off. They hit threes.
Those guys were hitting threes. We didn't play a perfect game. We missed two. We missed 4 points with Bryce Williams in the last 5 minutes alone with layups that we missed. We had a flagrant call on them that we turned around and got 0 points on that possession. We didn't play perfect by any means, and yet still won by 16. And we took every one of their aggressive plays. Purdue would take that 11-point lead at half and take it right down to 3 5 minutes into it. And it's like, well, that's it. Nope. We would go on our run. And it was a back and forth. And that night, I have no problem saying we were just flat out the better team. And I don't know that we're going to hit 60% from the threes every night or 65, but we won by 16. We could, Niecy could have missed all five of his threes and we still win by one. I mean, it's just, that was hopefully a blueprint for us, you know, from an effort standpoint and from a confidence standpoint. That is something we can play like that. We can do more than just be holding our crossing our fingers and biting our nails on Selection Sunday. We can be better than that. Yep. And that's what I think Bryce Williams was trying to get across in that postgame presser, is that we can be better than that. Let's go win the conference. Even if we don't, the mentality, go win this thing.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. Well, I guess I'll close Nebraska ball out with this, and just the sense that I think good for the fan base collectively to have that much fun on a random Tuesday night, I guess. Right. You know, I mean, it was fun to watch because it wasn't nerve wracking the whole time, you know, and it turned out in our favor, and they looked like the team was having fun. The crowd was awesome on TV. And I know it was on Peacock this time?
Yeah, it was a Peacock game.
Yeah, yeah, and I happen to have that because I'm lazy and didn't cancel from the football game that we had from several months ago. But, it was awesome. It was cool. I think the fan base needs more of these moments, right, Honk?
And we've said that forever with football, and it applies to any of it. I mean, I thought about those statements you said, Dave, when I was there that night. I was like, this is big. There's 10-year-old kids that are, you know, should be in bed and have school the next morning. They're going to remember that game. And there's some 45-year-old kids that are going to remember that game too, because that was, we hadn't beat a number one team since 1982. It's only the fourth time in the program history. And it was a big deal.
Do you remember that game?
I don't.
I just had to ask.
My first season.
Dave. What are you talking about?
My first season in Nebraska ball. I remember the last year of Mo Iba, and I remember us losing to Western, listening to the game on radio, listening to Western Kentucky losing that in the NCAA tournament, and then he like quit later that night. But so I mean, I go back that far, but. Boy, 1982 at Missouri. That's the last time we beat the number one. So, good on Fred. I'm happy for him, and hopefully that's a good sign, a good kickoff to the 2024 year, and a sign for good things to come.
Yep, absolutely. All right, guys. That was a fun basketball segment. Boomer, let's turn our attention to football. Let's put on our scarlet colored glasses and talk all things Husker football and really college football in general. And I'll throw it to you. I mean, we've got tons of topics we could attack here. What do you want to talk about first?
Oh, geez. There's so many things to go after. I mean, do we want to start with Husker recruiting and portal transfers? I mean, that seems to be exciting news. So, why don't we start with that? I mean,
let's do it. Well, I'll just do a quick recap, I guess, maybe. And recruiting the class turned into be a top 20 class. Part of that because we did land Dylan Raiola. I don't know if you knew that, Honky, but I know you've been taking some time off away from the program. But we did land our 5-star number 2 recruit in the country. And I think there's a lot of, a good class before that happened. I think it was awesome to keep Danny Kalin. And I think there's a lot of contributors and stars in that class, but they will take a little bit while to mature. In the last couple of weeks, though, Matt Rhule and company has done some great work in the transfer portal. I think they've been very selective, it seems like, and it's really paying off here the last few days We've got now, what, 6 or 7 transfer portal guys. I don't know if we're going to go much more than that, but a lot of players that could have a significant role on next year's team. Honky, do you want to run through a few of those guys and what you think?
Yeah, this is as opposed to the last 2 years, the last season of Frost and the first year of Rule, you know, we hit the portal kind of hard. And I know last year we hit it harder than we wanted to, but it's just the nature of the first year. This year's a lot different. And this goes back to that culture thing too. We've lost 4 or 5 guys to the portal. So that we didn't have this mass defection, which you're seeing all across the country. We didn't have that this year. That says a lot to the, I think, to the culture, to the enjoyment the players are having as part of the team. I also think it speaks to a pretty competent NIL program for retention purposes, and that's important. But the players that we did bring in from the portal, we have 6 guys so far from this year's class. One of them came at the end of last year, Bly Hill, and he's a sophomore, a defensive back, very much kind of a project kind of a player, not someone that I think they're expecting just to plug and play right into next season. So this is somebody probably to fill a need at a role. But the 5 guys that they brought in here basically in the last week or two, these are very specific players to what I'll say is add depth. I never like to say the guy's just an immediate starter, but someone that's going to be adding immediate depth to these positions and is going to be here during the offseason. So Dante Dowdle is the running back from Oregon. Isaiah Nair and Jamal Banks, 2 big guys, 6'3 and 6'4, 2 wide receivers that are older. They've played, you know, college football now for 3-4 years. Banks specifically, I mean, he was the leading receiver last year at Wake Forest, and he's a 6'4, 200-plus pound guy. So these are guys that can be really plugged into some positions that we needed some of that depth and some of that leadership at. On the O-line, Micah Mazkow, who I didn't realize, but his brother is on the team, is a walk-on running back, if I remember
is
right.
Is that how you pronounce his last name again?
I'm saying it Mazkow, so M-A-Z-Z-C-C-U-A. And he was at Baylor for 3 years, played at Baylor, started there by the time he left. And last year they thought he was going to come to Nebraska a year ago, and he ended up going to Florida, started at Florida for 11 games this year. Big dude, big offense guard. And part of him coming here kind of helps. I think we know Newley's gone. I don't think Piper's, I guess I don't want to say that he's done. I mean, but he had a horrific injury there at the end. And
right. Yeah. He may not know for a while if he could, you know.
Yeah. I think Mazkow, at the very least, you're bringing in somebody that you're hoping can plug into one of those spots. And you've got other guys, Lutovsky. And, you know, there's Jenkins, and I mean, there's other guys that could be playing those other guard spots too. But I think that was a kind of a surprise one. And then today, at the end of the day, on the defensive side, Stephen Thompson, inside linebacker, that was an area of need. And he came from Syracuse, was obviously recruited under and played under Tony White there at Syracuse. So, you know, they've hit wide receiver, running back, offensive line, and linebacker. The only position that, you know, in a perfect world, I wouldn't mind seeing one more quarterback on the roster right now.
Yeah.
You know, for the offseason, you've got Harburg, and then you've got the 2 true freshmen. Now, again, this goes back to what we said all last season, all offseason, was Rule wants this to be a developmental program. You're going to be, you know, dabbing into the transfer portal. You got to get guys in here now. And that's what all these guys are. So every name we just mentioned, these guys are going to be here.
Yeah.
And so they're going to be competing in spring. That's crucial. I wish we had one more quarterback just for the competition piece of it. But, you know, I go back to, you know, I don't just label any guy a starter. I can't stand reading that. Like Dante Dowell came in here because he's going to start for us. He very well might. He might be the best damn back we've ever had, and he might, you know, he might be all Big 12 or Big 10 next year. But we also have Emmett Johnson coming back, who was playing really well. And you get Gabe Irvin and Ramir Johnson, you know, healthy, and then you get Quentin Ives into the mix. All I want is competition. And what I like about all these guys, when I've read their articles and everything, from Dowell to Banks, all of them have basically said they want to come in and compete. They talk about competing.
Yep.
They're not coming in that there's no prima donna. Like, this is my position. This is what I was given by the coaching staff. You haven't earned anything. This is, you get here now and start working And I'm ecstatic that we got these guys.
Yeah. You know, I mean, to the point of it feeling different in past years, not only is it a smaller group of transfer portal guys, they are coming in with starting experience of their own, but mm-hmm. also willing to compete, which is exactly what you want. And yeah, I mean, running back, I mean, who starts and who ends up, you know, playing more snaps is irrelevant. It feels like almost at this point in how running backs are utilized. But to your point, I think Dowdell brings a different running style and body type than maybe, you know, we have mm-hmm. with a few of the other guys. And that's great. I mean, the offensive lineman, however you want to pronounce his last name, I'll call him Micah. I guess his first name. 20 some starts. That's good, right? You know, I mean, like, I think that's and against good competition, Big 12 and SEC, and graded really well, if I understand right. So that's, I mean, if Henley Lutofsky or Jenkins beats him out, so be it, right? That means they're playing really well. That's good stuff. So it's really promising, and I think they've had a very intentional approach to the portal this year, and that's paid off. You know, I'll throw this to Boomer or Honky. I don't care, but like the quarterback question is a really good one, and it is. You know, the Casey Thompson thing was a random rumor that didn't have any much merit, but he did sign with Oklahoma today, which I would love to see the research of who's actually played for Texas, Nebraska, and Oklahoma in their college career.
And it's got to be a pretty Atlantic. Limited window. Yeah, there can't yeah. be a whole lot of those.
But, you know. But he's. I mean, Oklahoma's probably starting Jackson Arnold next year, right? Casey's there for security, right? So ideally, to Honky's point, I'd love to find somebody who is okay with being a potential backup. If they don't win the starting job, competition will start in spring. But if someone's got as much experience as Casey Thompson is willing to come here, it just seems like those are hard to find. I don't know what other type of quarterback would be out there, whether it's a JUCO guy or a FCS guy that would be just wanting to have the big time college experience, but it has taken some meaningful snaps at a pretty high level. I don't know where you get that quarterback on.
Yeah, and some of it might be you just have to wait until spring because, you know, these rosters are going to change again once spring ball rolls around and mm-hmm. all this is going to kind of sort itself out. You know, Nebraska's mm-hmm. got to cut some scholarships. You know, we know that. So there's going to be people leaving, you know, in spring, and that'll be true at all teams. So there's going to be another opportunity. Yep. The portal will open again, and you'll have another
opportunity. Alabama probably has 2 5-star quarterbacks.
Just yeah, probably. And with Quinn Ewers staying at Texas, Arch Manning might be available. So maybe he'll want to come right. here and throw to some, you know, high-quality receivers that we're getting in. So. Yeah, don't rule anything out at this point, you know. But that'll be the big thing, yeah.
I do think it speaks to the importance of a guy like Harburg, and I know there are yeah. Husker fans out there that were they're just ready to discard him, throw, you know, get rid of him. Oh my gosh, terrible he quarterback.
Started 8 games.
The guy yeah. started 8 games. He won every game that we played last year that we won, he started. And yes, the defense played a huge role. Don't get me wrong, but it wasn't he did some good things too, and what he needs is development. We're supposed to be a mm-hmm. developmental program. This mm-hmm. is a guy that a year ago under Whipple wasn't even in the room half the time with the quarterbacks. So yeah. yes, he needs to be developed, but the importance of him right now, as you've got him and you've got 2 true freshmen, and you know, to Boomer's point, could there be a Joe Burrow kind of guy that could come in after the spring is done? You could, but that I just don't even want to count on that kind of stuff. I don't even like to think that way. You know, I mentioned the last 2 off seasons, the first one of Rule and the last one of Frost. They were both bigger portal off seasons mm-hmm. than I want to see. I don't want 15 guys coming and going, and neither does Rule. But even the difference between those 2 off seasons, at least when Rule did it, every guy was here to compete in the spring. Other than the only guy was Tyler Knack, the guy from the offensive lineman from Utah. He was the only guy that came here after spring ball. You mm-hmm. go back 2 years ago, and that's when O'Shawn Mathis is the big guy, and he gets here in June. We get, you know, Drew, that defensive tackle from Texas Tech, didn't even get here till August. That's you're not developing anybody that way, and yeah. that's just not a way to build a team, period. And so I really yeah. like how Rule is doing this. And with the quarterback piece, you mentioned Kalen. That is probably one of the things that perked me up as much as anything in the last few weeks or last month with the program was – when we announced that Rayola was interested again, it crushed me to think that you know, we just don't just pull the rug out under this guy. Right. You know, I mean, and that doesn't sound like something Rhule would do anyways. Rhule is, I think he's so good as a communicator. He's so good with how he deals with people that's not how he's going to do it. But I was like, I don't want to see us lose this kid that's been so important to this entire class up to this point. Carter Nelson and Bricks and the receivers from Bellevue West. I mean, Kalen did all that. And to see us be able to still pull in Rhule, have it work, and have Kalen come here as well. I mean, there's something right there. And Kalen said all the right things about competing, and that's good. Yep. They're going to need to compete. I love that. And we kind of got in the weird way. I keep hearing people say we didn't get the benefit of a five-star during the recruiting class. I think we got the benefit of two quarterbacks. Kalen yep. brought in all those guys I just said he brought in.
Yep.
And now we've hit this portal piece, and Rayola's come in here and got Dowdle and Nyer and Banks. We've kind of yep. got, you know, a little bit of it all there. And so, you know, I guess I'm a positive guy. I want to look at the positives there. And we walked away with two elite 11 quarterbacks in the same recruiting class. And I said, how, you know, when's the last time that's done? And somebody on Twitter goes, oh, it happens all the time. It happened in 2014 and 8 and 2002. And I was like, yeah, three times or four times this entire century. You know,
by who as well, right?
And it was by, you know, not teams that went 5-7 the year before. And so all of that just, it comes back to Rhule doing things the right way. Let's build this the right way. He has said over and over again, we're going to be a developmental program. We're going to recruit local. He's brought 8 kids in from Nebraska a year ago. He brought 8 kids in from Nebraska this year. He already has 8 offers out to Nebraska kids yeah. this next year. That's impressive. And it hasn't been at the expense of not going out and getting a 5-star quarterback. He did it. It's not at the expense of never going into the portal. He'll go in and pick and choose, but I like how he's trying to build this, and he's building this in a way that looks very Alabama and Georgia like to me. Alabama and Georgia do not live in the portal. They don't go and bring in nope. 10 and 15 guys a year. They lose more guys than they bring into the portal because they go and yeah. recruit a bunch of guys, develop them, and if you can't play, you're probably going to move on. And we yeah. may run, you know, hopefully we get to be so good that we run into that case too, where there's 4-star running backs that come here that don't play in 2 or 3 years and they have to leave because yeah, they just can't right. find a way on the field. What a great place to be in. So God dang it, Boomer. For people that listen to us and don't watch it, Boomer has all these, you need to watch it because Boomer has all these banners at the bottom. So yeah. So anytime I say something, you always twist one of my, so Rhule's going to Bama.
according to Red Cast Honky. You know.
Well, I don't know who Red Cast Honky is. I'm Honk Morgan, and I'm glad to meet you.
That's right. Well, speaking of being more Alabama-like, Boomer, we did catch Dana Holgerson in Lincoln last weekend. He was spotted at PBA. I can't remember. I think it was anyway. It definitely seemed like there's a lot of smoke to that fire that he may be joining the staff in some capacity. What do you know about that? And what do you think about Dana Holgerson coming up here and helping out the offense?
Yeah, that's definitely been a good subject of kind of subterfuge lately. It's just what was he doing here and what's his possible role, I think. I think what everybody would expect is some sort of quarterback role, whether it's quarterback coach, whether we actually get an official position on that, or some sort of analyst in that role. That seems to be the most natural fit for him and kind of what the staff needs and what it wants. Now, will it be a full-time quarterback coach or will it be that analyst position? I don't know. Do we have an opening right now for a full coach, or would they have to shuffle some things around? Or
so Josh Martin was on kind of like, it wasn't a full like two or three year contract,
right?
He basically took over the tight ends coaching position when everything went down back in April, in August with the former coach. And so I think he was going through the rest of the year, and I don't know if he would go back to being an analyst or however they'll do it. There are analysts that make six figures at different schools, so you can do that too. We can benefit, you know, potentially with Holgerson, whatever role they put him in. I've heard everything from offensive coordinator, pass game coordinator, quarterback coach, or analyst. We could potentially benefit from a coach having been fired at a previous school and still getting paid out by them. I mean, imagine that.
Definitely.
After all the years of dead money that we've paid, we actually could be the beneficiary of that potentially with a guy like Holgerson and get him at a rate you never would normally be able to do.
Yeah, and rehabilitating these coaches worked for Bama for so many years. You know, how often did Saban bring in coaches that had kind of been fired or been, you know, cast aside and bring them in? They turn themselves around and keep turning things out for the Tide. So, heck, maybe that's Nebraska's new role. So,
yeah.
Just taking all your wayward coaches and rejuvenate them.
Like Boys Town, really, you know.
Basically, and they ain't heavy. They're my brother. That's the new thing.
Look at the QBs that. Look at the QBs that Holgorsen has worked with too. Guys that have gone on to the pros. You know, he has a nice resume there. And really, you go back to last season and let's build on that defense that we had. And so we bring White back. That was a concern. You go back to November, right after that Iowa game, and write down your list of concerns at that moment. Well, are we going to keep White? Are we going to you can go back through all that. Well, now here we are today. We didn't lose our defensive coordinator. We didn't lose Nash. We didn't lose Ty Robinson. I think it was, Rhule said on the press conference during signing day that the best job we did in the portal was not losing guys to the portal. The best offensive tackle we could get in the portal was Benhart, and we didn't lose him. So, you know, guys go into it, and that kind of goes, you know, Andrew has a question here. Any opinions about our O-line? That's a whole list of those guys there. I mean, Ben Scott could have left and gone pro. Benhart could have gone portal or gone pro, you know, left early. Turner Corcoran, you know, these are guys that are all coming back. Then you add Mazkow into the list. You have Prochazka, get him healthy. You have Lutowski started playing quite a bit. And then Justin Jenkins there, Evans, as much as he played at the end of last season.
He's got experience.
He's got experience now. And then it will start to be fun to see those guys like Gotula and Sledge, those dudes that have gone through one offseason now. They are redshirt freshmen, developmental. How much do they start to play as redshirt freshmen? Can we blow out a team or two and they get in there and later in the game? How about a guy like Grant Bricks, the big four-star guy that's going to be here all offseason with the four-game redshirt rule? You know, he gets in there for a few, you know, games there. There's more depth. The experience on this offensive line, my gosh, I mean, it feels like we're just talking about the same names over and over again. We could have done this show 2 years ago with some of these guys, and they were Prochazka and Benhart and Corcoran, but but that's good. And now they've got year three under Raiola to work with. And I'm expecting big things from the offensive line. I really am. When you look at the guys that potentially, if they'd gone into the portal, if a Benhart, think of Princewell, think of Leonard,
sure,
think of Fedoni. How about that guy?
Could have got money. Yeah, no doubt.
Nash, about it, you know? Robinson, any of those guys go in the portal, and we're all nervous that they'd be picked up by somebody, some other school, right? Some better school than us.
Just like Hausman last year.
Just like Hausman. Well, you know, Rhule, I think, has a way of building this program up to, there isn't a better school than here. Stay here. This is where you should be. And whatever it is, whether it's NIL or Nash, you want to wrestle here, we can make this work with you too. You know, these guys, they you can just tell the guys enjoy being here, or else they wouldn't be.
Yeah,
it almost doesn't make sense that we haven't lost more guys. We're at 90. The number I saw right now, the last I saw, we were at 94, and then we've added these five transfers.
Some players would have to be like, man, I'm ready to go, right? I don't see a path to playing time. You look at some of these other, there was a rundown of Big Ten teams, right? I mean, we're talking like, I mean, even Iowa, but like a lot of these teams have 15, 20 guys leave already. Pretty rare to only have four or five.
Yeah. And we're at roughly probably 99. Then the last I saw was 94. And then we've added the five transfers this year. Now, not every guy is going to be on scholarship. There's all kinds of talk, like a Mazkow could be a walk-on here, and then NIL fills in. I get it.
Right.
You know, we know that game now.
We won't even really know a lot of that, right? Because they don't need to disclose who's on scholarship and who's not, right?
Sean Callahan said one time, he said he thinks, this is what I read in one of the, you know, one of the chat boards or whatever, he said he thinks that IGC was a walk-on last year. But not, I know he was. I think.
Right.
Or I've heard. And so at the end of the day, what I'll say is we have 99 scholarship caliber players there.
That's why you're going to start deciding. Yeah. We're going to lose some of them before the season starts, but I bet we won't lose all of them.
Yeah. And let them compete. And part of the competition is there's two or three or four walk-ons, I hope, that earn scholarships by August. Guys that aren't on our radar right now. When I think
of NIL deals, whatever they want.
Yeah. Or tonight, you earn whatever the equivalent of a scholarship is anymore, because who knows what that is, except for Florida State and their collective. They have apparently did something wrong. But short of that, you know, earn whatever the equivalent of a scholarship is. But yeah, a year ago at this time, I mean, you had Borkercher and you have the two Bullocks, and those are guys that they end up playing roles. Maybe there's a quarterback. I mean, to go back to the quarterback talk, there's Longball on the team that came here from Iowa Western. Who knows? Maybe that kid, you know, earns himself, you know, not necessarily playing. Well, I don't know. He just earns himself, you know, the fourth
the ability, spot. Yeah, chance to compete, you know,
yeah,
in an earnest way, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's one more guy that's not listed, at least on the sheet that I'm looking at right now. And yeah. I know a quarterback, I know that we want to see more than three. And that's why it would be nice if we had one more, but
yeah,
is what it is.
Hey, Boomer, Andrew List, is that the Andrew List that we know?
Yes. Sure. Yes, it is.
No, Andy. Okay.
Yeah, it is.
That's Andy. Cool.
Yeah, formerly right. the Andy, but yeah, he's more professional now. It's Andrew. So yeah.
Yes,
we also have RS watching, and he's watching from Cebu, Philippines.
Yeah, he's been on many times.
Yeah, yeah, we're big in the Philippines.
Absolutely,
you didn't know that.
Well, at least in Cebu. Yep.
That's awesome.
All right, all right, all right, guys. Well, we're having a lot of fun here. We're 50 minutes in. We've talked recruiting, transfer portal, hockey. I still have more things I could talk about. What do you want to talk about football-wise?
Yeah, I do want to – this goes back to the culture thing, is that I like the fact, like, tomorrow night, 6:30, Nebraska's number six in wrestling. We're going to be playing wrestling against number three Iowa, who's, of course, a blue blood of wrestling. Nash went out there. The polar bear wrestled for the first time in college a week ago against – I think it was a Wyoming guy, and pinned him in the first – period.
Yeah.
And you guys know how much I know about wrestling, like nothing. I just like kind of stay within the circle thingy and get guy on his back and try to score points, apparently. Right. Mm-hmm. But it's fun to watch. And man, the whole, you know, all the football guys that were there, it seemed like the whole damn team was at this thing cheering them on. They had transfer recruits that were in there. Apparently Holgerson was at the thing even. And this goes back to what I think Trev is trying to build as an athletic department is, it's also this cooperation between programs that, you know, that Mark Manning, the wrestling coach, and Rule get to know each other, and they can sit there and have a conversation and say, hey, if it makes sense, you know, yeah, we can help Nash lose a few of those pounds, and Nash can help the wrestling team out. Let's go ahead and do it. And when I was at the last semester, when my family went down Friday and we ate at the training table with Tyler Kai and everything, and we had the naming ceremony there. I mean, we ate, it was a home football weekend. The volleyball team had a home weekend, and we're eating in this training table, and all the players are there, all the athletes, all the programs, everyone's kind of sitting at tables, you know, and bumping into each other. I ran into Mark Manning like 10 times. That dude's like just jogging around, you know, getting his food and talking to everybody. And it's like, I can see how you can just all these bump in conversations and these chances to have people just that culture of a big family kind of getting created. I mean, family eats around a table. Well, that's what I think Trev wants to create there. And prior to Trev being here with the old training table, I can remember walking by there, walking around, and you see people all the time walking out with boxes of food and stuff, and whether they eat it or don't or whatever, that's a whole different thing. But Trev, I mean, that was an important thing he said early on. Rule came in there and said, we're going to eat together. And you go out and you build a $160 million facility with an even bigger training table, then it better get used. And I think we're seeing the byproduct of that right now with – it's almost across the board. I mean, volleyball is volleyball. They're their own, you know, beast of a program right now. But I think the trajectory that Rule has us on, what we're seeing with Hoiberg right now – softball just came out in their preseason 15th and of course went out and got the, you know, Jordy Ball to come home here.
Yeah.
You know, women's basketball goes out and gets Britt Prince from Elkhorn, and she's like a top, you know, 20 player in the country. I mean, all these programs, I'm interested to start talking baseball here in the next few weeks. Mm-hmm. It just feels like it's a holistic approach that Trev has taken, and we're starting to kind of, it's not just Hoiberg is finally taking off. I mean, I am bullish right now on just about everything within the athletic department that it's being run well at the top, and it's just kind of filtering its way down through all the programs. So,
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, no, that's great. That's great. Yeah. All right. Well, I mean, just a couple of other random, you know, college football takes, I suppose. Speaking about well-run programs, Alabama is looking to replace their head coach. Nick Saban has left. We can talk a little bit about that, but we're not experts on Alabama or Nick Saban. We just know he's probably, you know, considered the greatest college football coach of all time with 7 national championships. And he's really, in 17 years there, done some amazing stuff. We can speak, Honky, I'm sure, a little bit about, like, thinking through how, like, Nebraska had to transition away from T.O. and the challenges of following up a legend of that nature. What do you think the next coach at Alabama is going to face, just knowing what Frank Solich faced here?
Yeah, I mean, let's be very clear about Saban leaving. This is not the, you know, there's no other, the last time we've even had a comparable coach leave a program, the athletic director was named Byrne as well. I mean, this is how rare this is.
There's a nice symmetry to all this. Yeah.
Yeah.
You wouldn't say like Bowden or anything like that?
Not even. This is, I mean, there are only 3 coaches. I think it was Brett Cianci at Pick Six Preview said there's only 3 coaches that have coached, what was it, like more than 25 years, had more than 250 wins, and had at least 3 national titles. And it's Osborne, it's Bear Bryant, and it's Saban. That's it.
Yep.
It is such, this isn't just great company. This is the elite of elite. I used to argue with people till I was blue in the face about, you know, Osborne's the greatest of all time. At this point, I'm fine certainly with Saban being in that conversation. I'll just say that there's a Mount Rushmore of coaches. That makes it a little more easy to have that conversation.
More inclusive.
And if you throw 4 coaches up on there, you put Bear Bryant on it, you put Saban on it, you put Osborne on it without even a second thought. And I'll let people argue who the 4th should be. But those 3, Saban, what he did there, what he did not just for Alabama, but what he did for SEC.
Yeah.
I mean, SEC wasn't winning national championships prior to him getting to LSU.
No, LSU was just kind of an average program, you know, when he took that over. People forget that, you know.
Yep. And he really instigated, I think, what that whole conference that, and for what it's worth, a lot of that conference, when I think they're overrated, it was because you had 1 or 2 teams that were just so good, but nobody else was beating them either. I mean, you know, if the SEC is so deep, then, you know, they would be beating Alabama on a more regular basis. They haven't been. I mean, that's just his success these last 16 years. It almost doesn't feel like he's been there that long. But then you go, you look back on it, it's like his first season, they went 7-6, and every single year after that, they won at least double digits every game. So to go back to your point there, Dave, about what are the expectations of the next guy? Well, they're going to be really effing high. Like, if you go, you better not go 10-3. You better not go 9-4, you know, and have 2 close losses. You just better not, because it is not going to be acceptable there any more than it was here when, you know, when that happened here. And we fired Solich, who now is going to be a Hall of Fame coach in the next class. We fired him after 6 seasons that included a conference championship, that included a entry into the national championship game, that included, what, 4 double-digit win seasons? I mean, all the things that, you know, you would look back on now and go, why in the world would you fire him? Well, you do it because your head's in la-la land, because you don't know what's realistic anymore. Alabama fans do not know what is realistic. They just don't. And I don't blame them. I mean, I just hope they just appreciated the heck out of everything they've just gone through. Their next guy may be able to keep some of the success going. Alabama's got a lot of positives going for them, but I just know I'll go back to the 2005 era when the 3 best teams in the country at that time, at any given point, would have been Florida with Urban Meyer, would have been USC with Pete Carroll, would have been Texas with Mack Brown. And all 3 of those schools, anybody would say those guys will never, they are in the hotbed recruiting. They are, you know, big time programs, tons of money. You know, they will never, you know, just fall drop back off the face of the earth. They'll never fall back. Right. And all it takes is losing Urban Meyer, and all it takes is losing Pete Carroll. And, you know, even at Texas there, they were starting to already have some trouble with Mack Brown at the end, but point is, it didn't take much. It was that coach, it was that guy at the very top, and all of a sudden some of that success starts to wane. And there's other great teams around there. That's the thing. If Alabama even just slips a little, right, there's Auburn and State to take up whatever slack, or there's LSU, or now you've got Oklahoma and Texas coming into the conference. There is so little room for margin for error. And that's what made coaches like Osborne and Saban so amazing, is that they took there was no game they took off. Every game was the Super Bowl to them, how they prepared for it. And that's something pretty special.
Yeah. You know, Boomer,
about kind of online, you know, next year, 2024, it's Alabama's actually going to a north site to play Wisconsin, and they actually play Georgia in the regular season for the first time since Neptune's gone around the sun last. I mean, and that's going to be tough for whoever takes this job. I mean, we commented about Stuart Mandel saying, if you really want to coach Alabama, the smart thing to do is just wait and let this poor sap who follows Saban, you know, flame out in the next 3 years and then step in. So, that's not impossible to consider that's something that could happen. I mean, it's hard to follow a legend, and man, you know, some names have popped up. You know, Lanning's already said he's going to stay at Oregon, which is probably a move if you're an Oregon coach. And now there's a lot of buzz around, you know, like Kalen DeBeer from, you know, Washington. I like DeBeer. He was one of my candidates for a coach here. I don't know if you know what he's getting into there. Florida State. Possibility. I mean, that would make a little more sense, just getting out of FSU than, you know, since they're stuck in the ACC, since their stupid GOR deal, which, you know, we've talked about many times.
But what do you think of Zach's question there? Zach, post that one again there, Boomer, if you can. He said that Bama wants to hire in 72 hours. Thoughts?
That was 24 hours ago.
Yeah. And, no, I think I mean, there's been talk that they want to have it named by tomorrow. I mean, that's what I heard.
Byrne came out and had to make the same statement that Trev had to make when he fired Frost, which was, you're going to hear a lot of rumors over the court. Now, in Trev's case, it was 72 days. Here, it's 72 hours, but it's, you're going to hear a lot of rumors. Unless you hear it from me, from Athletic Director Byrne, then, you know, don't believe it. But to Zach's point there about player retention, there was already the first decommitment, I think, today we saw on Twitter, decommitment from
wide receiver.
Yeah. And so, you know, this isn't a great time of the year to have this happen for them, in terms of, you don't want your roster to blow up right now. Kevin Steele, a week ago, the former Husker coach, he's the defensive coordinator. He retired. So, I mean, there's, you know, a little bit of, there's some transition going on there right now. So there's,
I think
this,
that's a part of the urgency, Honk. I think they feel like they need to.
And it was kind of one of those things that Saban talked about. He did an interview with Reese Davis earlier today, and it was, he said that was one of the reasons he finally decided to hang it up, is, you know, it'd be, whether it was people he was hiring or, you know, players he was recruiting, they were asking him, you know, can we guarantee you're going to be here in, you know, 10 years, 5 years, 3 years? And he said he's getting to the point where I can't honestly say that to people anymore. And that's part of the challenge when it comes to keeping a roster together like that. Is, you know, you're thinking you're going to play for Saban, and, you know, now you're not. So who are you going to fill that with? And I think that's why that urgency is there. You've got to make a good hire. And it probably has to be a splashy hire. You're Alabama. You're not just going to hire random schmo, you know. Unless he's not available, he might be sitting on the plane right now. I don't know.
I mean, it's intriguing to that point, Boomer, is in the sense that it's impossibly as flashy as Nick Saban, right? You know? And so how do you do that? Because, I mean, Mike Norvell is a super well-respected coach. Been at Florida State now for, what, maybe 4 years? But he hasn't even made the playoff, right? You know, Kalen DeBoer has made the championship game, didn't win it, right? I mean, there's very few national championship coaches out there. The ones that are available are probably past their prime or just got fired themselves. The ones you really would want are you know, in really good spots themselves. So it's really intriguing. And it highlights what Saban achieved at Alabama, and how the SEC has changed so much in that time, right? And maybe it's the playoff going forward too, right? Someone like Lane Kiffin, maybe in the past, would have jumped at this. But now he probably thinks he can make the playoff next year with Ole Miss. And he, to Stuart Mandel's point, why follow right now? I might come in 3 or 4 years, right? You know, it's the SEC is so elevated since Saban joined, and actually probably a little bit before then. I mean, for some of our younger listeners that probably don't really, you know, think about that. I mean, the SEC prior to LSU with Saban winning the title in 03, I was trying to do the math really quick there, right? They had Florida, Tennessee, and Alabama each win one title apiece in the 90s. Yeah. Alabama was completely random, but the other two kind of built up and got those. Georgia, probably the only SEC team to win in the 80s. 81?
It would have had to have been, I think. I can't think of
they didn't win one title in the 80s until Alabama got theirs against Miami.
Yeah, and kids don't remember that, but Alabama was like the plucky underdog in that game with Gene Stallings that the nation was rooting for.
Plucky underdog.
I mean, that's the crazy thing about that championship. Yeah. I mean, that's the last time I've cheered Alabama.
Then in the 70s, Bear got his last two titles in 77, 78. He might have won one earlier in the 70s, but no one else in the SEC won.
Yeah.
In the 70s, in the 60s.
Arkansas, I think, won, maybe won.
Yeah, but they weren't in the SEC at the time.
Oh, you're right. You're right. Yeah, they'd been Southwest.
Ole Miss had a great year.
It even just goes back to the reverence I have for Osborne, also, is the fact that he took over for a legend. And I always say it in the Southwest Corner Memorial Stadium, there's a reason that they have that plaque there. Don't ever take those four pillars and that plaque for granted, Husker fans. That it's from 1983, and that we had the fastest in NCAA history, and it's still got to be at this day, to 200 wins between two coaches. It took them 22 seasons for two coaches to win 200 games combined, so 100 each. The idea that you could have one legend follow another. Osborne wanted to leave Nebraska. I mean, he interviewed for Texas Tech, I think, when they went down to the Sun Bowl in 69. Mm-hmm. He was, you know, you don't want to follow a legend. And that's that. You go back to 98 when Osborne was able to name Solich. And I think looking back on this now, I think he named a pretty good coach to replace him. I mean, this guy's getting inducted into the Hall of Fame now this year and has his name on a field in Athens, Ohio. And he has his name on the locker room here in Lincoln. But what Osborne, there was no good way to replace Osborne. There just wasn't. I've heard people come back now and say, you know what? Bob Stoops actually wanted to be head coach at Nebraska. Awesome. Mm-hmm. You can look at that through today's lens, but in 1998, are you going to get rid of your staff that just went 60-3 and has Milt Tenneper and coaches that have been here for decades, just so you can bring in the hotshot young guy? And when he goes 9-4 in year one, the exact same record that Solich ended up going. But could you imagine Bob Stoops came here and went 9-4 in year one? We would have run him out. We hadn't lost four games in a season since 1968 at that point. And it's because Osborne set such a ridiculous level of play. Right. To go 255, 49, 3 in 25 years, to average more than 10 wins and less than two losses over 25 years is inhuman. And what Nick Saban just did is inhuman. And it's not sustainable. It just isn't. I'm sorry.
Yeah, the odds of Alabama winning six more titles over the next 17 years is so low. It's I would bet against it right now in a heartbeat.
Just absolutely. And that doesn't mean that I'm not saying that Alabama is going to drop off the face of the earth. They're not going to start having losing seasons, get good, competent coaching in there and everything. But to think that there's not going to be a major transition, and maybe you get through a bit of next year, but even think about when the last time a really long tenured great coach left, Stoops, and who replaces him? Lincoln Riley. Oh my God, this guy's young. He's going to win for decades and decades. He's not there anymore. Yep. You know, I mean, it is so hard to replace
that guy. He's struggling at USC. Yeah.
Now he's struggling there. Right. And at Oklahoma, you're already now in your second coach since Stoops. Now you're switching conferences, and who the heck knows what happens then. So, stability is so important. It's one of the reasons I am so happy with where Nebraska is right now. I guess I'll bring that back to us with this. Yep. Trev and Rule, man, as long as we've got those two guys, you know, on the same page leading this, I feel so good right now. I really do. I wish we had a few more wins last year just for the sake of having that, you know, the taste for the Husker fans to have. But the idea, the concept that we're not doing things right or whatever, that's just not there. I'm really happy with the status of where we are as a program, and I can't wait to watch the competition now this offseason. I think this is the part of the year I get real excited, is the competition part, not all the roster building, recruiting, you know.
Right. Well, let's wrap that up with one more thought then, Honk. And Boomer, I know you probably have a take on this a little bit too, but talking about building up a program and doing it the way that you want to do it. Jim Harbaugh got his national championship on Monday night, and we could spend a long time talking about whatever you're calling the Connor Stallions controversy and the spying and all that type of stuff. But at the end of the day, Michigan did beat Penn State and Ohio State and Iowa and Alabama and Washington on at the end of the season without all of that going on. And I think they did prove they were the best team. They weren't like, it's not one of the greatest teams of all time. There's flaws to that Michigan team, but they were on a mission this year and they delivered their first national title since 1997 doing it the way Jim Harbaugh wanted to do, right? Kind of like Fred Hoiberg you're talking about. You know, Harbaugh had some mobile quarterbacks initially. They were trying to do different stuff. It wasn't that successful. They really got back to what Harbaugh had success at Stanford, power football, run game dominant, pro style, and it paid off with a recruiting class was on average 14th in the country, which is not the Alabamas and Georgias and Ohio States of the world. And Michigan won, right? Honky, I guess I'm saying that in the sense that from that Nebraska culture and building the program right and doing it the way that you want to do it, I'm not saying we're winning a national title in the next couple of years, but the playoff, I think, can be a realistic goal in the very near future, actually, if all these things continue to build in the right direction. Do you see how Harbaugh had success at Michigan as a template for
role? Sure, absolutely. I mean, I think a lot of it just starts with the confidence that you can do it. But, you know, we're recruiting well enough right now. We have the roster we have is good enough to be competitive at a national level. And sometimes you need a little bit of luck to go along the way too, right? But you go back to 2020 and Michigan's sitting there at 2-4, you know, and that's the COVID year, but they went 2-4 in 2020, 3 years ago. They are a team at that point that hasn't beat Ohio State in almost a generation at that time. You go to Washington 2 seasons ago, Washington's 4-8 right before DeBoer gets there. These are the teams that just played for the national championship just 2 and 3 years ago. And so I think things can be, and I think you can look at Nebraska then. And last year, records matter, and we were 5-7. But I think you can look at a record and you can go, well, you're 5-7 and you lost to a national championship team. Michigan clearly outclassed us. No doubts there.
Yep.
Colorado, anyone that was at that game, Dave, you and I were, that was, I wish we could have that game over. And that was a weird game at a weird time. And they were as hot as you could be. And
I wish I would have got them in game 8 posted.
Absolutely. And then the other 5 games are unlike anything. I mean, I know it's Nebraska, you know, football the last few years, and we've just been kicked, but to have 5 losses by 3 or less points, one of them being the overtime to Wisconsin. So that's a 1-point loss. I know we lost by a touchdown, but if it's overtime, that's a 1-point loss in my book. To lose 5 games that close, to lose 3 of those games on walk-off field goals, to go into November and lose all 4 at the end, that's a tough way to end the season. There's no doubt about that. But rules positivity is much needed right now. And I just think his demeanor, you know, leads that way. And then it's, let's attack the problem. And the problem wasn't everything. We don't need to Dion the team and get rid of the whole offense line, get rid of everything. No, in fact, we're going to probably have as few of departures as anybody in the entire conference. And then we're going to go out there and we're going to cherry pick the guys that we need at very individual spots. And we're going to create competition. We're going to get the 5-star quarterback. We're going to keep our other in-state quarterback. We're not going to do something just at the expense of trying to win a game. We're going to go out there and all the things that he has built into the vision of this program, recruiting locally and going out there and breeding competition and being a developmental program, we're going to be that too. And so I hope, you know, right now, whenever I read someone says, Rayola is the starting quarterback on day one, he very well may be, but I usually mute that person because we don't know. I don't want anything given to anyone right now, and I doubt that Rule is giving anything either. Let's let them compete like crazy. And I like where we could be in just a year or in two, you know. I think the Michigan and Washington right there, it shows you that this doesn't have to be the long runway. This isn't a 7-year plan like Moose did on year one, you know, when he hired Frost. This isn't that. We can be good and we should be good.
Yeah, and I think that's something that the expanded playoff will make even more achievable for teams going forward. You're not going to need these massive, you know, rebuilds and constantly stockpiling these huge, you know, recruiting classes of all five-star talent just to make those things and impress the voters and impress the committee to, you know, to put you in this. It's a lot of teams are going to have opportunities to get into this postseason and then make something happen. And I, you know, that'll be great for teams like Nebraska, where you can put together something like this and make it work. And it's really going to be good for a lot of teams. Heck, the 14 playoff this year worked great. We had a kind of a totally different, you know, final than I think everyone expected. You know, you get, who would have predicted, you know, Michigan and Washington to start the year as your final, as your champ?
I'll always be frustrated by Florida State not getting
in. I agree too. Yeah, this whole thing was a travesty, but yeah.
I mean, it was bound to finally happen in the four-game era. Thank God. It's all the more reason to get to 12. I used to fight, Boomer, you'd attest to this. I would fight the idea of playoffs. I hated the four-team one, the sanctity of the season, the bowl season, all that stuff. But look, what this thing grew into, this bowl season was such a dud, and I'm so turned off by it. And I was turned off by it, not just because Nebraska didn't make it. I was turned off the second Florida State didn't get in there. This is a garbage postseason. This is bad for college football fans, what's going on, until we saw the actual playoff games being played. Then it was like, okay, that's what it is. At this point, the way this bowl season is and has become, I'd expand the playoff further. I mean, at this point, I see so little reason not to, but
another bracket 12.
And I don't want to get us into a whole different thing. This could be another conversation for the next show, but college football's got a lot to fix right now. I don't think 1600 or 1800, whatever we're in the portal now, I don't think that's a sustainable and good thing year after year. NIL just running amok. We're seeing Florida State today apparently being, you know, penalized for something. Who the hell knows what the rules are with NIL at this point, but you know, there are some things that need to be addressed. The postseason, the bowls, all that. Fans are the ones that get hurt at the end of the day by all this. If I was a fan of a team where half my team didn't show up for the bowl game, or if I'm watching, Duke versus Troy, and you got both coaches have bolted already before the game goes, how can you sit there and talk about how important this is, you know, how important these games are and everything, and you should be spending your money on this when that's what it is? Yeah. I mean, come on. So that's another discussion. I could keep going on. Those are some of the things that have been going through my head, Dave.
Until the next time, right?
It was 3 months. Good to have these times to decompress and just let things flow, you know, meditate.
Since it was late September, early October was the last show I did. It was good to just kind of sit back and watch things. I genuinely, as disgusted as I was, and that's probably a good word for it, as disgusted as I was at some of the national stuff that I'm seeing and some of the things are changing in this game, it's happening at the same time that I'm as enthusiastic about the team I care about and a coach that's doing things truly the right way. I mean, he's at a program where if he just wants to write a blank check to players, Nebraska's can benefit as much as anybody from NIL just overspending on players. I'd much rather do what he's doing right now. Use that money to retain players, retention. Guys that are here that have been, you know, doing things for you for the last 2, 3, 4 years, he's using it that way, and he's bringing these huge classes and in-state kids and everything and developing them. That's the right path. That's new school college football with old school mentality combined. That's what Nick Saban does. That's what I think Kirby Smart does. I don't have any problem saying that. I think that's what Rule is doing. I hope we can have the same success with Rule that those other guys have had.
Yep. Give him some time. All right. Yep. I think it's probably enough of a show there, hour and 18 minutes. Hopefully we can save some content for the next one, but let's get out of here with some parting shots, and I'll let Hockey get a breath here, and Boomer, you go first.
Well, mostly my big parting shots for the most part is, Hockey kind of mentioned it earlier, just when it comes to the whole culture of Nebraska sports, there's a lot going on right now. It's not just football recruiting. I mean, you've got Nebraska ball playing well. You've got women's, you know, basketball playing great. I just watched them play tonight, you know, beating Illinois at home. I mean, just go out and watch Nebraska Iowa wrestling. I mean, they don't get Nebraska wrestling doesn't get enough, you know, press for what it is. Just enjoy it. Watch that stuff. Just
their number six in the country.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. So just watch all these alternate sports this time of year and just support Nebraska generally. And the other thing is the weather is going to suck here in Nebraska for the next few days. So just be careful out there. Don't drive if you need to. Stay home, stay warm, and just be sensible.
That's right. That's right. I mean, sensible would have been the Dolphins winning their game last week, so they wouldn't have to go play the Chiefs on helped. Saturday
what
night.
What does it count? If a game's on Peacock, does it count if nobody sees the playoff game?
I think it's going to count, Boomer, and I think they're not going to like the weather out there. And you guys have been to the Arrowhead when it's really cold out.
Oh, yeah, so. That stadium does not lend itself well to, like, stiff breezes and cold weather. That's a very miserable stadium.
And when we talk about an expanded playoff in the future and having home sites, we've always talked about the SEC and those schools that never have to play up north. The idea that the Dolphins are going to have to play in negative 30-degree temperatures against KC, that matters. I still think back to the Chargers game back in the day when they had to play at, like, Cleveland or Cincinnati or something. Was it at Cincinnati with, like, Dan Fouts? And, you know, that was, like, the highest-scoring Air Corey Allen. Weather matters. Can you imagine? Hey. Think Husker fans, Redcasters, there's going to be a day where Lincoln, Nebraska is hosting a game and we're going to have Alabama or somebody coming up here in December. And
darn straight, well, hell, the way it's going now, it's January because you've seen like the postseason next year. I've got it handy. And my God, they're stretching us out till freaking January 20th. And of course, the finals in Atlanta, you got the final, you know, the semifinals in the Cotton Bowl and the Orange Bowl and everything else in the Sugar and Peach and, you know, if you had.
On campus there, December 20th and 21st, which would be
plenty cold.
Yeah,
I mean, this is something we can talk about next show is how we would redesign the postseason, but holy crap, can we stop doing this, people? Let the Bulls die. Stop the SEC's advantage. Play all of that at home sites until the final game. The FCS has this figured out.
I'm all in with Boomer here. Boomer, you have converted me, hook, line, sinker. It's taken you 15 years, but you've done it. I'm converted.
We played the long game here. We're willing to convert anyone we can. You know, it's just what
probably
going
to take another decade or two to bring everyone along. But until then, let's hear Honky's parting shot.
Same point that the Boomer had about all the other programs. Tomorrow night, Friday night here, Nebraska and Iowa are on BTN from 6:30 to 10:30 or 11, whatever. Wrestling first at Devaney Center, then followed by the Husker basketball game at Iowa City. So hopefully we're successful there. Hopefully we just come out and we play well. That's what I want to see as much as anything. You know, wins on the road, you're going to take everyone you can. When you're playing Iowa and wrestling, I mean, they are the blue blood of wrestling in the conference. They're undefeated right now, so that's going to be a tough one. But who knows, man? And let's see. And I really want to see Nash out there. I'd love to see him, see what he could do there. So, speaking of one of the other teams, softball, I mentioned today they were preseason number 15, and awesome. The Jordy Ball effect is out there. So excited about softball right now. And I know they had a rush on season tickets last year when she made the transfer. So hopefully they can get off to a good start here in the next month, and that'll be fun. And then last but not least, I mentioned it one time earlier too, congratulations to Coach Solich and to Danny Woodhead. Two of the College Football Hall of Fame inductees for this year. So obviously Solich, player under Devaney in the 60s, longtime assistant coach, head coach here. He was also an assistant coach in the state of Nebraska prior to coming here. And then Woodhead, the North Platte kid that went up to Shadron State, probably one of those guys that I don't ever want to see us miss on again. There's talent in the state, and he's just a good example of that. So congratulations to both of those guys. That'll be a fun ceremony for Nebraskans to watch. But glad to be back. Looking forward to whenever our next show is. I don't know if we're going to do them every week or how we're going to do them in the offseason. We're going to just kind of have a little more fun and not make everything so structured.
We'll do it
and
when we want to talk about something.
That's right.
Maybe another Nebraska basketball win. I don't know. We'll see.
Why not? Who knows?
That's right. All right, guys. It was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it. Hopefully our listeners did too. Until the next time, let's call this a Go Big Redcast.
Go Big Red.
A Heard at Sports Network production.